ShareCare is the leading online health and wellness engagement platform, providing millions of consumers with a personal, results-oriented experience by connecting them to the most qualified health resources and programs they need to improve their health. It's time now for ShareCare Radio on RadioMD.com. Here's your host, Dr. Daria.
Hello, it's Dr. Daria. Let's dive into the health news of the week. Remember, if you miss anything, you can find it on RadioMD.com, where you can download every segment individually on demand. Now, our first segment comes from an organization near and dear to my heart. That's the American College of Emergency Physicians. They released a list this week about what you can do in your home to reduce the risk of accidents in young children. And they talked about how more than 12,000 children die each year and more than 9.2 million are treated in emergency departments for injuries from these kinds of accidents. They said that unintentional injuries like burns, drowning, falls, poisoning, and road traffic are the leading cause of death among children in the U.S. So they gave some guidelines to help everybody know how to protect their homes, protect those near and dear to them. Number one, use safety latches for drawers and cabinets in kitchens, bathrooms, and other rooms that can contain dangerous products like cleaning supplies, knives, sharp objects, and medicines. I know anyone who has children in their family or in their home knows that they seem to be drawn to those drawers that have the most dangerous stuff. So it's extremely important that you put latches on them. Children can get into all sorts of things, and some things like antifreeze and other chemicals may even attract them more because of their color, a funny smell. You just have to keep it out of their hands. Number two, safety gates. Using safety gates to help prevent falls downstairs and help prevent children from going in areas that may have potentially dangerous things in them. And make sure those gates meet current safety standards. There actually are safety standards that you can look up. You want to make sure they press against a wall and often are actually mounted with screwdriver and nails, not just pressure mounted, because those are not necessarily safe. Children can push those and cause them to knock down and fall over. Number three was placing protective childproof covers on all electric outlets that are in reach of children, just eliminating that ability to stick an object or their fingers into the outlets. Number four, make sure all electrical cords are out of a child's reach and properly secure. I know that I have seen children, they bite down on them. And in the emergency department, we had one toddler who had bitten into an electrical cord and actually shocked themselves and burned their mouth. It's so, again, very dangerous. Keep those electrical cords out of reach of your children. And next is fastening all heavy bookshelves, televisions, cabinets, or anything that could potentially tip over. This is, again, something I've seen in the emergency department. People often put a television on top of a bookshelf. That television is so tempting to that little toddler. They'll crawl up the bookshelf using the bookshelf as a ladder, trying to reach that TV. And in the process, they can pull the entire thing over on them. So anything, any bookshelves, anything that's tippable needs to be anchored to the wall. You can buy some great anchors at any Home Depot, Lowe's, and anchor those to the wall so the child cannot pull it onto themselves. Again, very important with televisions, even a television on a lower TV stand, they can pull those onto themselves. So anchor those down so your child cannot be harmed by them. And the next one, a toilet. Getting a lid locking device on all toilet seats. I know it sounds crazy, but especially in children under the age of 1 to 2, can be buckets and toilets are places that they can drown. They fall in, their head is underwater, and they can't lift it back out. So it's extremely important to put locks on all toilet seats so the child cannot get into them. Next is cordless window coverings. There are some great options out there. Either use a covering that has no cord or keep the cords up out of reach. Use corner or edge bumpers. Everybody knows this, sees children with little bruise on their forehead because they ran into something. Put a corner bumper on sharp edges like furniture and fireplaces. Number nine is create a protective barrier around pools and spas that include at least a 4-foot-tall fence with a self-closing and self-latching gate. It's also a good idea to look into getting a pool alarm as an additional layer of protection. I always say you want many layers of protection when you're coming to pool safety. You want fences, you want alarms, you want people watching. It's by having those 8 different layers of protection that you're going to make sure you keep your family safe. Now, according to the CDC in 2012, suffocation was the leading cause of injury death for children under the age of 1 and drowning for children ages 1 to 5. So taking the time to childproof your house is crucial and one of the most important things that you as a parent or family member that loves a child can do to protect them. Moving on to our next one was about concussions and football play. And this is according to the Daedalus Center for Sports Injury Research and Prevention in Indianapolis, Indiana. It found that high school and college football players suffer more concussions during practice than during games. Now, they studied concussion in youth football teams, high school, and colleges, and saw that more than 1,000 concussions were reported, with 66% from high school students. The highest rates of concussions were in college, and for both high schoolers and college players, the greatest percent happened during practice. So what's really important here, coaches and football parents must be educated about the proper techniques for tackling, equipment use, and how to recognize the signs and symptoms of concussion so that you know when to remove that athlete from play. Know how likely it can be, and also, as this study says, to pay attention to practices, because from a numbers game, an athlete spends much more time in practice than in the game themselves, and it's really important to remember that those concussions can happen in the practice as well. Our next study was an interesting one. It was about how our view of what makes us happy has changed. And this is a British psychologist from the University of Bolton, and they recreated a famous study on happiness that was initially conducted in 1938. Back then, in 1938, they'd placed an advertisement in the newspaper asking readers to answer the question, what is happiness? They then compiled a happiness index by rating how people ranked the importance factors. They repeated this survey in 2014 with many of the same questions and trying to recreate it as closely as possible, and then compared them. So in 1938, security, knowledge, and religion were seen as the three most important aspects of happiness. In 2014, security, good humor, and leisure were the top three. Religion was actually in the bottom place in 2014. Another striking difference was that the majority of people in 1938 said they were happiest when they lived locally in Bolton. Now, 63% of people in 2014 said they were happier away from the town, which really also supports what we see with people moving away from where they have grown up and some of that fragmentation that we see. So fascinating how our desires and goals have changed over the last 80 years. Now, this other study I really wanted to share, and I talk a lot about the benefits of exercise for a variety of things, from physical health to mental health. This one found potential impact on cancer treatments. This was research from the Kansas State University and offered encouraging information that a brisk walk or a slow jog on a regular basis may be one of the keys to improving cancer treatments. They looked at moderate exercise and how it can help blood flow and improving the treatments. They recommend, now the National Cancer Institute recommends exercise for cancer patients and survivors, but there's really little research on what actually happens in blood flow to the tumor during the exercise. So they looked at that and they said that it needs to be just the right amount. Too little exercise has no effect, but a really high intensity exercise may have a negative effect and change blood flow to the tumor region or even impair your immune system. So you really want good, moderate exercise. And that's, again, non-strenuous, but something that most people can perform, such as a brisk walk or a slow jog. And it's also going to help in many ways, also counteracting some of the side effects of treatment, such as fatigue, weight loss, and overall muscle mass loss. And this new information is a great additional tool for anybody trying to undergo cancer therapy right now. Now, this next study is helpful for any parent who has a child who doesn't want to sleep, and that's the importance of a nightly bedtime routine. This is a multinational study by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, saying that keeping a regular bedtime routine is associated with better sleep in children 6 years and younger. The most important was to be consistent and to have that consistent routine, giving them the signals that they know to start going to sleep, and that could include a book, bath time, maybe a bottle or a snack, brushing their teeth, really reading a bedtime story. They said that having this set sequence of pleasant and calming activities before bed can really establish a great behavioral pattern to help the child go to sleep and help the rest of the family too. So a good nighttime routine is good for parents as well. There you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for this week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at Dr. Daria, also at ShareCare Inc. You're listening to ShareCare Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for tuning in and stay well.